It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
I gotta say, the eclipse yesterday was pretty, pretty cool. We're all talking like Larry David now that he's wrapped the 12th and final season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. You know, I got the glasses and staring up at the sky, and pretty fortunate here in Washington. Well, it was not a total eclipse. It reached 89% of the sun being blocked by the moon. So you could slowly see this black orb starting to cover up the sun. And it proceeded slowly over a couple of hours. But when it reached the point where the sun was just a sliver, for much of that time, it was odd because it was still sunny. It just shows you how powerful the sun is down here on Earth One. When it reached the 89%, which lasted about 4 or 5 minutes, it was overcast, as you would expect. And I heard a lot of birds chirping and some dogs that seemed to be going crazy. Don't know if there's a cause and effect there. And then gradually the moon moved away and more of the sun was exposed. And it happened to be a nice 70-degree day. You know, the places that got the total eclipse, which were towns in Texas, Indianapolis, ultimately Buffalo. You know, these were sort of group events, community events. Everybody's out staring at the sky with the funny glasses. I thought some of the cable coverage, some of it was just outright silly. Other coverage, you know, they kept going for live shots to reporters who mostly I've never seen on the air, network reporters. Now they'll have to wait another 20 years to get back on the air. In the next eclipse. And you know, there was one about 7 years ago, so it's not like it's unbelievably rare, but there was something about this one, I think, that just captured the imagination of people. And so they kept going to the same reporters who basically kept saying the same things. Or they would interview people who were really into it. And then, I don't know, things were back to normal. It really ticked me off is in some of these areas, I think the example I saw was in Indianapolis, but it might have been Texas. Hotels, because of the surge of tourists, I mean, something like 1 million people went to the Buffalo Niagara area. They didn't just raise their prices. Their prices were 10 times as high. You know, if it ordinarily it would be $200 a night, it would be $2,000 a night. And that's just sheer corporate greed, which I'm not shocked. What are you expecting? From capitalism trying to capitalize on the eclipse. But anyway, it was, you know, it kind of dominated the day. And it was, I'm really glad I had a chance to see it. Now, story number one, the reaction to Donald Trump's 4.5 minute video yesterday. And it's really been something, yesterday on abortion. And he started out by talking about IVF. Which, you know, is very popular, and he was smart to get out in front of it, and he's totally in favor of in vitro fertilization, but obviously the pro-life groups say that certain embryos are discarded in the process, and therefore that's not acceptable. So when I sat down with Trump at Mar-a-Lago, he told me he wanted to come up with something that would make everybody happy, and I said I didn't think that was possible. And now that Trump essentially has just embraced the status quo, it seems like he's made just about everybody unhappy. And this was the cautious approach. Now, interestingly, you know, he told me he liked 16 weeks. Told a radio interviewer a couple days later, 15 weeks. And as we'll get into, he was, you know, seriously considering those with advisors for about a year. But he got, I guess he sent the signal. I personally favor a 16-week ban on abortion. And yet, he ultimately decided that that would be too controversial. And so, Trump did say, as he always does, that he is strongly in favor of exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, it's all about the will of the people. And if he hadn't made that statement, the exact same thing would happen under the Supreme Court's Dobbs ruling. So, keep in mind that when Ron DeSantis passed the 6-week ban in Florida, Trump said this was a terrible idea. Now, as I noted yesterday, President Biden put out a statement, which doesn't get you much airtime, saying that Trump was responsible, which he was, which he said he was proud of, the demise of Roe v. Wade. And this was fostering cruelty and chaos. And later on, he spoke at a fundraiser and made stronger remarks. You know what's interesting about doing it at a fundraiser? No cameras. It's reported, but again. Although I did see this morning a brief clip on Instagram that Biden had made. And that should have been up an hour later. I don't know how many people that winds up reaching. So, here's some people who didn't like it. Mike Pence. President Trump's retreat on right to life is a slap in the face to the millions of pro-life Americans who voted for him in 2016 and 2020. I know pro-life Americans will never relent till we see the sanctity of life restored. So, you know, this is a very strong moral position by the former vice president, now attacking the president he served with. He's a deeply religious man and wants no abortions in America. The question now is, does Trump own, or do his opponents sort of push him to own things like a 6-week ban? Or what about all the states that have a total ban? You look at a map and there's a lot of them. They've banned abortion right now. Then we get to Lindsey Graham, who put out a statement saying Trump had made a mistake. Remember, this is his closest friend in the Senate, his golfing buddy. And he compared the decision, or he said it would age as well, Trump's statement, excuse me, as the Dred Scott decision, which I looked up to make sure I had the details right. 1857, Supreme Court, slaves are not people. American slaves cannot be counted as citizens. And therefore are entitled to no protection from the federal government, even if they live in territories or states where abortion is outlawed. Slaves are not citizens. Well, Trump went off on Lindsey. He said, among other things, that what Lindsey was doing was damaging for the country, that Lindsey had been all over the map, that at first he supported a total ban, then 6 weeks, then 15 weeks, without understanding the Democrats are never going to give him what he wants. And then he said, you should be more concerned about the border. Thanks a lot, Lindsey. Great job, Lindsey, he said. And then there was another one saying, I feel responsible for Lindsey Graham because I campaigned for him. And otherwise, you know, he would have lost. Well, you know, Graham's been a senator from South Carolina for many, many years. And I do have to repeat from yesterday's podcast that when Trump said that all legal scholars on both sides supported an end to Roe, demanded an end to Roe, I mean, it's just completely and flatly untrue. Legal scholars who lean to pro-choice or just felt that a 50-year precedent shouldn't be overturned by the SCOTUS conservative majority don't have that position at all. And then you have Marjorie Dannenfelser of the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America Group. We're deeply disappointed in Trump's position. Unborn children and their mothers deserve national protections. So he's got Biden and the Democrats ripping him. And remember, Trump once described himself as very pro-choice. But when he ran in 2016, he took a strongly pro-life position. Here's a National Review editorial saying the Democrats' position, however appalling and deceptive, and that's a reference to late-term abortions, is at least a position. Trump is transparently trying to avoid taking one. Always go with your heart, but we must win, he said in a bit of empty rhetoric that accurately summarized what preceded it. Trump wants to leave abortions to state electorates while declining even to advocate that they protect life. Trump was specific about which abortions he would permit, those for rape, incest, save a mother's life, but declined to endorse or even mention any proposal to protect unborn children, even one as limited as a ban on abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Well, that's limited depending on whether you're on the pro-life side. If you're on the pro-choice side, you oppose it. But it is sort of where it seemed like it had the potential to become the national compromise. Now, in addition to getting hammered by the Democrats, hammered by pro-life conservatives, listen to these two headlines. And these are news stories. New York Times, on abortion, Trump chose politics over principle. Politico, why Trump balked on an abortion ban? Pure politics. Now, let me just say that although those sound like editorials, I mean, it's fair to make the point that Trump made the decision he thought would be least politically damaging to him. But if he had backed a 15-week ban on abortion, the coverage would have been far, far more vicious. It would have been apocalyptic. Trump wants to end abortion after 15 weeks. This is just the beginning. Then he's going to go for 10 weeks and 6 weeks. Then he's going to go for a total ban. So it was a no-win position. The media were going to oppose whatever he did. Okay, here's a little bit of the background. From the Washington Post, former campaign manager Kellyanne Conway, Lindsey Graham, and a range of anti-abortion advocates went to Mar-a-Lago and talked to him by phone. By taking such a position, meaning allowing states to do what they want, he would be implicitly supporting some states that allow abortions up until birth, they told him. Conway made another argument. Trump would also be implicitly backing states such as South Dakota, Arkansas, and Florida with early in pregnancy bans that he believed were too restrictive and politically problematic, meaning problematic for Republicans. If he took a position like banning abortion after 15 weeks, she argued, he could make a compelling case against Democrats for supporting later abortions. So these people said, look, 15-week ban, which he, look, it wasn't a secret. It was reported by the New York Times. He said it to me. He said it in other interviews. For some number of months, he polled advisors about a 16-week limit, according to four people who spoke to him. What about 16, he said during one meeting. I don't like 15. 16 is 4 months. but some of his closest campaign advisors, so there was a split here, urged him to adhere to the campaign's original position. Anti-abortion voters would stick with him anyway, they said, and backing a national ban would further insert himself into an issue that has been politically damaging for Republicans. And, you know, it's kind of true in this sense. This is going to be a hot topic. It'll be a topic throughout the campaign, but in terms of it being, you know, the equivalent of a front page story, for 2-3 days. And then it'll fade because, like, what did Trump actually do? He didn't do anything. He didn't really take a stance except to say the people should decide. In private, Trump has repeatedly complained that some Republicans don't say at the outset that they support exceptions to bans, and has emphasized that these exceptions, the three exceptions, can't be the small print, according to one person. In recent weeks, Trump has also commented that too many state bans are too restrictive. So obviously, he was taking a long time to decide where he was going to come down. Okay, here's what Biden said at that fundraiser. No one trusts Donald Trump. He made a political deal with the anti-abortion right. Because this was actually an endorsement of a national ban, even though he didn't say it, quote, Biden. If they put one on his desk, he said he'd sign it. Talking to about 50 donors and friends in Chicago.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Story number two. Speaking of the president, his event yesterday in Wisconsin was about student debt. President Biden laid out plans to lower or erase student loan debt for more than 30 million Americans, promoting a narrower plan for debt relief than a forgiveness program struck down by the Supreme Court last year. Here's what he said in Madison. Today, too many Americans, especially young people, are saddled with unsustainable debts in exchange for a college degree. The ability for working and middle-class folks to repay their student loans has become so burdensome that a lot can't repay it for even decades after being in school. So far, if you're keeping score, Biden has approved $146 billion in loan forgiveness for 4 million public servants, defrauded students, disabled borrowers, and other groups who are already entitled to cancellation. Republicans are saying this is fiscally irresponsible. So it wasn't technically a campaign speech. Maybe he is announcing a government policy, right? I got to say, it got very little coverage. And it's not just because of the eclipse. It's because he was eclipsed by Donald Trump. Forgive me. With his abortion position. And there should have been some adjustment for that and not just speaking at a closed-door fundraiser. The plan focuses on select groups of borrowers, those who owe far more than they originally borrowed because of interest. Yeah, that's the way loans work. Those who've been paying for at least 20 or 25 years. Those who attended career training programs that led to high debt loads or low earnings. And experiencing hardship, which is such a broad exception that almost anybody could qualify. Elimination of up to $20,000 in accrued interest, regardless of a borrower's income. So here's the thing. Donald Trump is trying to get the votes of younger people, saddled with college debt, obviously, and middle-aged people who still have it paid off. That may work in terms of the individual beneficiaries. You know, it means you're going to think a lot more kindly toward Biden if suddenly your debt is wiped out. You thought you had to pay $20,000 and you don't. But in a much broader sense, he's helping people who least need help in our society because they're college graduates. And this is, in effect, taxpayer money being spent, because if it's money that's not coming into the Treasury, obviously, that's a loss for all taxpayers, including, you know, teachers and truck drivers and others who didn't take out student loans, who took out student loans and repaid them. So, you know, it's pure pandering, and that's not a sin. All presidential candidates engage in that. But there's no getting around the fact that he's helping people, most of whom, I would say, some exceptions, least need the help. Number three, Donald Trump, whose hush money trial begins in Manhattan, criminal trial, next Monday, now says he wants to sue, or he will sue, the judge overseeing the case, Judge Juan Merchan. This is another long shot. What he's trying to do is get this delayed, and if he got the judge kicked off, which is not happening, by the way, he will get it delayed. However, the appeals court acted almost immediately and rejected Trump's bid for a delay. So the trial will go forward as planned. Now, you might say, wow, Donald Trump's filing a lot of suits here, not just in this case, but he's challenging the non-disqualification of Fannie Willis, Fulton County, Georgia. He's trying to get friendly rulings in the classified documents case from the judge he appointed, an experienced judge, Aileen Cannon. But the fact is, these are all Hail Marys. I mean, every lawyer takes a stab at getting charges dismissed or thrown out, or if you can't accomplish that, delayed. Because, you know, there's some small percentage chance that it might work. Trump's lawyers have tried several times to delay the Stormy Daniels case. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court, taking its sweet time, still a couple of weeks away from even hearing arguments on the immunity case, which if the Supreme Court, which I sincerely doubt, were to say that Trump is protected for virtually anything he did as president, or even it extends to after being president in the case of classified documents. Why the court is moving so slowly, people have their theories, is really hard to understand given the importance of this election. And Jack Smith filed his papers with the Supreme Court saying the immunity case that Trump was trying to build was ridiculous. That's not the word he used, but that was the sum and substance of it. Now you get into the gag order and Trump attacking Judge Merchan's daughter on social media, posting articles with her picture. Now the gag order has been expanded to include her and to include Alvin Bragg's family members. So the DA's office said Trump predominantly repeats the same arguments that he made in his first recusal motion more than 10 months ago. And that this court, the appeals court, previously considered and rejected, saying this was a daisy chain of innuendos. Now, here's Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, occasional guest on my show, talking about the classified documents case. Prosecutors argued that Trump hasn't made a designation claim because he never actually designated the documents as personal records. The documents, in any event, are patently not personal records. Trump has elsewhere conceded that a court has the authority to review a claim that presidential records are personal. A claim that documents are personal records would not be a defense against the Espionage Act of unlawfully retaining national defense information. The 11th Circuit Appellate Court has made clear the documents are the property of the United States, not Trump's personal property. So after a long legal back and forth, McCarthy says, one can argue that Trump is being selectively prosecuted. I agree that he is. And that it is particularly unfair after a different special prosecutor declined to recommend an indictment against President Biden, whose classified information offenses were also gravely serious, but which did not include hiding material and refusing to turn it over. That doesn't mean Biden did everything right. He obviously didn't do a lot of things right, including that as vice president and holding on to these documents for years, he had no power to declassify them even if he wanted to. But McCarthy concludes it simply cannot be credibly argued that the Mar-a-Lago prosecution of Trump is frivolous. The indictment sets forth real crimes, and the evidence appears to be quite strong.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Moving on to number four. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene today is ramping up her threat to try to topple Speaker Mike Johnson. She put out a 5-page memo to her colleagues, a copy of which was obtained by the New York Times. I wonder how they got it. Green assailed Johnson with a point-by-point takedown of his record as Speaker. She accused him of fecklessly advancing President Biden's agenda and wasting opportunities to advance GOP priorities. She warned her colleagues that they risk falling out of touch with their voters if they continue to accept what she called a complete and total surrender by Republicans under Johnson. Remember that Green was a close ally of Kevin McCarthy, who was the first to be ousted as Speaker. I guess it's about 6 months ago now. Under the rule that he agreed to, that any one single member could essentially call a vote of no confidence. So when she first did this, she said it was a warning. And she wasn't following through right away. She didn't want to cause the Republicans to be in chaos again. But now it sounds like she is going to follow through. If these actions by the leader of our conference continue, then we are not a Republican Party. We are a uniparty that is hell-bent on remaining on the path of self-inflicted destruction. I will neither support nor take part in any of that, and neither will the people we represent. Now, the thing that Johnson now wants to do is get funding for Ukraine in exchange for, you know, essentially pork barrel projects having to do with lifting a moratorium or a ban or rules and regulations about energy. And one facility that would benefit would be built in his Louisiana district. That's an unpopular position within the Republican Party. And that may fuel MTG's effort here. A little bit of other politics in this segment. Politico reporting that a local activist working with the RFK Jr. campaign to get him on the ballot in New York wants Republicans to unite behind Kennedy and defeat Joe Biden in the fall election. Her name is Rita Palma, P-A-L-M-A. She said in a presentation to a local group in Hudson Valley, New York, and man, is this saying the quiet part out loud, that she was hired by the Kennedy campaign as a New York State director about 3 weeks ago, that she voted twice for Trump. I'm going to vote for Bobby. However, if I wake up on November 6th and Trump wins, I'm not going to be overly upset. But if Biden wins, we're all going to be terribly upset. And this is according to a video of her talk obtained by Politico. Oh, the Kennedy campaign distanced themselves from Palma and her remarks in a statement to Politico. I'm sorry. This is your New York State director. You can't distance yourself. If you don't agree with what she's saying, you need to get rid of her. That's the only reaction that would matter. Oh, she goes on to say, right now, we have a majority of Republicans in Congress. Slim margin, but true. If we keep that majority, personally, I think we're going to increase it. And then Congress picks the president. Who are they going to pick? they're going to pick Trump. So we're rid of Biden either way. So for those, even though Trump has said that, you know, RFK is a radical Democrat, and by Republican standards he is, Trump has also said he's glad he's in the race because he thinks he hurts Biden. But it's not just a question of him unintentionally hurting Biden. I mean, this woman wouldn't have taken the job, right? The people who work with her, unless it was to get rid of Biden. I'm not saying they don't have the right to do that, but at least be honest about it. And she was, and we have it on video. All right. All right, let's close it out with number five. AOC is planning on targeting AI-generated porn with legislation after her image was used in deepfake images. So speaking to Rolling Stone, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was scrolling through Twitter when she came across a deepfake image of herself performing a sexual act. Quote, "As a survivor of physical sexual assault, it adds to a level of dysregulation. It resurfaces trauma while I'm trying to, in the middle of an effing meeting." She called deepfakes a way of digitizing violent humiliation against other people and tied them to the problems women face today. According to one cybersecurity study, more than 90% of deepfake videos are non-consensual. Now, on the one hand, I got to think that 100% of the people looking at this know it's not really AOC performing a sexual act, but, you know, somehow they think it's titillating and they get off on it. And it is outrageous, and there should be a law against it. And one can understand the outrage of a member of Congress discovering that her image has been used as well. AOC going on to say, "It's important to me that people understand this is not just a form of interpersonal violence. It's not just about the harm that's done to the victim, because this technology threatens to do it at scale. This is about class subjugation. It's a subjugation of an entire people. And then when you do intersect that with abortion, when you do intersect that with debates over bodily autonomy, when you're able to actively subjugate all women in society on a scale of millions at once digitally, it's a direct connection with taking their rights away." And Ocasio-Cortez goes on to say, "Kids are going to kill themselves over this. People are going to kill themselves over this. The humiliation." So she's introducing the Defiance Act, or has already been supporting the Defiance Act along with Dick Durbin, allowing victims to defend their reputations and take civil action against the individuals who produced, distributed, or received digital forgeries. The only problem there being, how do you track them down? She said this is just another way the critics are trying to get her out of office. And guess what, MFers? I'm not going anywhere. Deal with it. Well, that's the unvarnished AOC. I don't see how anybody can defend this, but I also think it's hard to stop in a digital age when people can hide behind layers of secrecy. Well, I'm not going to use any language like that, but I guess you can do that in this day and age on social media. And once again, hope you had a good day yesterday. Hope you enjoyed the eclipse. The abortion debate will continue. Mike Johnson's fate is not clear. The hush money trial will start next Monday with jury selection. And I'll be here to cover all of it for you. See you tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
from the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.